I had a nurse ask me, he said, why do you call things the way that you say them? Can't we just say what they are? And I looked at him and I said, we can, but that's like speaking a different language to a kid.
Yeah.
So when the doctor comes in and says, hey, we're going to do an IV, the kid is, I don't know what that, like the plant, like I'm confused. Whereas if you ask a kid, hey, have you ever had an IV before? And they're like, no, then okay. An IV is a small plastic tube that goes into your veins. The doctors call it an IV. I like to call it a medicine straw. Hello and welcome to Medical Mamas. I'm Allie, here with my co-host Melissa. We are the founders of Medical Mamas, certified child life specialists, and mamas of little ones.
Hey, I'm Melissa. Our goal for this podcast is to provide parents with resources to aid in navigating acute medical experiences, general wellness, child development, and life transitions from birth through young adulthood. We are so excited for you to be joining us. Today, we want to share with our listeners about what it is to really go into the unknown. I think we've all been there as parents. You have new experiences, but the medical space is a very unknown. It's the Oz, I feel like, to a lot of parents. There's this curtain or veil, and on the other side, there's a lot of language that you're not familiar with if you don't work in the space. I think as parents, we're already reflecting internally or feeling a certain way going into these unknown situations. But then we think of our children and they're being asked to comprehend these situations. I think it'd be awesome to start out with language because I really think that's where it all starts.
I think language is super important. And I think there's a couple of different aspects of language that you can talk about. I think being careful of the words that you choose so they are more concrete and not as ambiguous is important. I think that shying away from harsh language is important and making sure that your child's familiar with the language that's being utilized is important. So when I think of making sure that we're using developmentally appropriate language for kids, those three things are the things that I think about: ambiguity, keeping it soft, and making sure it's familiar to them.
I have a few examples of things like addressing change. And people who have a background with maybe a family member who has chronic condition or had a medical experience may know that addressing is really another name for a Band-Aid, but it's usually like of a different size, shape, or it might have a different material, but the idea is it's a bandage. To a kid's ears, dressing change, they may associate that with a dressing room or dressing like their clothes. So they may think they're being asked to change their clothes or go somewhere else to change whatever's on the outside of their body. In reality, it would be a potentially interesting sensation because it can involve tape or cotton or gauze or other materials. And so that's just one example of how casually mentioning the dressing change without pausing to think how the child may hear that could be very confusing to the child.
Another ambiguous thing that I always think of, like the first one that comes to my mind, is for our kiddos that are going to be having anesthesia and they're going to be going to sleep. For a lot of kids, that could be like, wait, you just said you're putting me to sleep? We put my dog to sleep and he never came home. And so using words, we're going to be giving you a medicine. It's called anesthesia. I call it sleepy air. It helps you take a nap, but a different type of nap. But using concrete language that they understand and not being that ambiguous.
We have countless examples of these. If you all are interested in how to rephrase something that your child's going through, feel free to reach out to us. We're happy to give you other language to use.
I'm thinking about familiarity. I don't like to use the word shot, but sometimes when I say a poke to kids, they look at me with these eyes and they're like, I have no idea what you just said. And so then thinking of the most familiar thing is a shot. So I'll say like a poke, maybe sometimes kids get a shot at the doctor's office and they're like, oh yeah. I had a nurse ask me, he said, why do you call things the way that you say them? Can't we just say what they are? And I looked at him and I said, we can, but that's like speaking a different language to a kid.
Yeah.
So when the doctor comes in and says, hey, we're going to do an IV, the kid is, I don't know what that, like the plant, like I'm confused. Whereas if you ask a kid, hey, have you ever had an IV before? And they're like, no, then okay. An IV is a small plastic tube that goes into your veins. The doctors call it an IV. I like to call it a medicine strap, but breaking it down, knowing what are they familiar with? And if they're not familiar with that, let's translate it for them. Let's find something that they can relate it to so that they can really understand what it is. We could talk about developmentally appropriate language literally for hours. We could do an entire podcast episode or series on it, honestly. So I think that we should move to the next thing, which is the importance of laying out the steps for a child or a teenager.
Absolutely. We like to call it in the field sequence of events, but the idea is that it is the step-by-step instructions. For those of you like myself who buy a project from a large warehouse department store and put the directions aside, this is especially for you because you're sharing the process with somebody else. And it's important that just like yourself in a medical experience would not want any surprises, our kids don't like surprises either. There's a theory out there that's the just go do it, get it over with. And while a child who has experienced it with preparation may then choose on their own to no longer have certain notifications or cues along the way, there is evidence supporting that the children actually cope better when there is the proper sequence of events laid out for them to prepare them for their medical experience.
Definitely. It's breaking down the unknown. And that's not to say that you can't make it extremely simple or very detailed. Oftentimes when I ask young children, like preschoolers, if they know what's going to be happening and they're going to be having surgery, the parents look at me with deer in the headlight eyes, and I know in their head, they're like, oh my goodness, what are you going to tell my child? Please stop. And really, I'm not going to tell them everything. I'm going to say, hey, we're going to give you some sleepy air. You're going to take a little nap. You're going to wake up and mom and dad are going to be there. Not going to go into all the details for a young child. If I have a teenager that is super interested in all of the steps and keeps asking me questions, I will give them as much information as they want. But knowing the basic steps of something to all of the steps, and that's where your healthcare providers can help you as a parent. Always welcome to step outside the room to have a conversation. If they're going to be talking about something and you're like, I don't want my child to hear this yet, it's okay to say, hey, can we please step out into the hallway to talk about it? And then you can determine what steps are good for your child to hear.
Moving on to sensory experience, this is really all this is going to tie together, as you all are already picking up on, but the sensory experience. So we use developmentally appropriate language based on the child and family we're working with to explain the sensory experience. And then the sensory experience is also broken down into the steps of what's going to happen. So there's obviously different pieces in each step that will potentially impact a different sense of our bodies. And as many of us remember from probably health or bio 101, there are 5 major senses in our bodies. There's sight, taste, hearing or auditory, feel and touch, and smell. Wild, but like a lot of times, almost all of them are involved when explaining a medical experience to a child in preparation for that experience. It's our job to break these 5 senses down and to say, hey, kiddo, Johnny, here's the experience that's about to happen. This is what you're going to see. This is what you might taste. This is what you might hear.
When I think of sight, breaking it down for a kiddo, I'm going to think about the major things that are going to be different than just the typical medical environment.
Sure.
For example, in sutures, the providers use a tool that looks very much so like scissors, but in fact, it is something to help hold the suture string. That string feels like fishing wire, is very slick and slippery. And so if you are not using that specific tool, you're not going to be able to do the sutures. But for a kid, when they first see that, they're like, oh my gosh, you're putting scissors right in my face. And that's not to say that they don't use scissors during sutures, but the main thing that they are going to see is going to be that tool. So with sight, I just think of things that are going to be different. And then I think of, is there a way to not have to see that if that's what the kid wants? Mm-hmm. So is this child really doesn't like watching pokes happen or doesn't want to watch the sutures that are going to be happening on their body? Can we block their view or in a creative way to make it so that they don't have to see that thing if they don't want to?
Yeah, absolutely. And advocating for them to see it if they do, because we also have the medical professionals on our team who we love dearly, and they think they're protecting the child by blocking whatever's going on. And in fact, that child needs or wants to be able to see to be able to better process and cope with the scenario. Moving on to taste, I think the most obvious is medicine. But actually, Allie, I'm going to let you take it away, because I know with imaging and such, it's not just medicine, but just other substances that they sometimes have to drink. I don't mean to put you on the spot, but I'm just thinking of sometimes contrast isn't put through the IV. It's like they have to drink the contrast. Yeah,
that's very true. And I mean, contrast is a liquid.
Yeah,
I typically call it a medication, but it helps the images show up a little bit better depending on what the doctors are looking for. There's other radiology procedures too that you might have to drink, like barium for. A lot of those ones that are not typical medicine, they can flavor for you, or they come flavored. And it's come a lot long ways in the last 10 years. And so typically it doesn't taste too bad. I would think for all the moms out there that have been pregnant and have done the glucose test where you have to drink the liquid, that little bottle, and drink it pretty quickly and wait 30 minutes, it tastes like a watered down version of like an orange drink or a lemon lime drink, depending on the flavor you get. But it similar to those. The barium is a little, it's chalky, but they can typically flavor it with like chocolate syrup or strawberry syrup. It just depends. But those are definitely things as a parent that you can ask for. And another thing that, Melissa, you taught me this earlier this week, is that if you get prescribed a medication that does not taste good, and it's from like the pharmacy, you can ask the pharmacist if they can flavor it for you.
Another that's a trick I learned on a GI unit. There are some gnarly medications up there, and nothing against the local pharmacy down the street. It's just they're mixing the meds and they see the weight of who it's going to, and they may or may not register if it's a child or not. And not all flavors can be used with all medications. So it is something where there are some medications that just can't be flavored. And we all know it can be difficult sometimes for kiddos to take medicines. And at the end of the day, that's the important part, right? That they get their medicine that they need. As a field of child life, advise against hiding medicine in food. Next one of the five, auditory, is what we hear around us in our environment. The most obvious is MRI. If you do a non-sedated MRI, all of the buzzing and whirring and clapping together of those thunderous magnets, Allie would be the first one to tell you in her outpatient world that they play those sounds for kiddos beforehand. So they are very aware of what it's going to sound like when their pictures are being taken.
100%. I also think letting kiddos and families know that they're going to be hearing a lot of different noises. Some of them is beeping. All of those noises are really there to help keep you safe. Another thing I think of is if an individual comes in with a C collar on from like a trauma, they're going to be laying on their back for a while until their spine is cleared. And so they're only going to be able to see the ceiling, but hear all of the noises around them. And so being their eyes to let them know there's these people in here, you're going to hear all of these different noises. All of these noises are people trying to keep you healthy and safe, but just really being their eyes for them because they can hear all of those things and they have no idea what is causing the noises.
Working up in the ICUs, another thing with auditory is actually the lack of sound too. So while yes, there's more machines and the buzzings and the beepings, if a child has been intubated, so they have a breathing tube placed, when that breathing tube is removed, they can sometimes have loss of voice. So we always try to remind our kiddos that their voice may disappear, but it will come back.
Okay. When I think of touch and feeling, I think of it in a couple of different aspects. One is something happening on the outside of the body, and two is something happening on the inside of the body. So outside of the body, very relevant to everybody, is we're going to clean your skin with something cold and wet prior to any sort of pokes, and it's going to be cold and wet. That's pretty common for every single child out there. Something that is more so on the inside feeling would be like anytime we're pushing fluid through any sort of tubing or catheter into the body, whether it's an IV or a port or a PICC line, most medications you can feel, even saline, you can feel it feels cold. And some medicines, when it goes in, make your body feel really hot and tingly.
Yeah, I love that. Inside versus outside. I think too, trying to give your kids the vocabulary to be able to describe when they do get hurt, whatever it is the pain coming in from inside the body or the outside of the body, because that also helps the medical team in their deduction of things as well. My tummy hurts. Is it something that you ran into and we have a bruise or contusion on the outside? Or are we talking about like a nausea, a gut thing, something like that? So those are just conversations that can be had at home. Your kids may be a little bit more familiar with how to advocate or explain what's going on with their body.
Yeah. And I think the last sense that we haven't touched on is smell. There's only a couple of things that really stand out to me with smells. One would be if a child has a burn and needs a dressing change, that can be pretty smelly. And two is, again, when any sort of medication is going through a catheter, whether an IV, a port, PICC line. Oftentimes kids tell us that they can smell it or they don't like the smell, which a lot of people who aren't familiar with it would be like, what do you mean they can smell it? It's going through a line. That doesn't make sense, but they can. And so just being aware of that so you can help navigate that better.
Up on inpatient, I also think about if you've ever had a kiddo with a seizure and they get an EEG, it's a bunch of little electrodes that are temporarily glued on their head, which this is a big one for touch and feel because kiddos have to have their hair combed and parted, but the glue has a pungent smell and it takes a long time to dissipate from the room. You can walk on a unit at a hospital and know that someone on the unit has an EEG recently placed because you can smell the glue from the front desk. So if you do find yourself in that situation where you're going to be doing any kind of brain monitoring with an EEG or a video VEG, just know that the smell is definitely something that you'll be experiencing with your child.
So I think that covers the sensory experiences. And really with them, it's helping break down the unknown so that your kid can expect what is going to be happening and helping them anticipate it with those senses. So what are they going to see? Are they going to smell anything? What's going to be touching them? Do they hear anything different? And are they going to have to taste anything? But really breaking those down into a way and letting them know about them so they can be better prepared for what's going to be happening.
And I would just add, don't hesitate to let them know if they're not going to experience something. Leaving it omitted from the conversation altogether may leave the kid wondering. So letting them know this is a quiet procedure. Let us know if you hear anything or like you shouldn't hear anything, and leaving that option for them to share back with you. But that way, at least they aren't like, they didn't say if I was going to hear anything or not. And then that kind of may or may not, depending on the child, leave them on edge.
Last thing that I like to do with a kiddo before a procedure happens is talk to them about ways that we can make it easier for them, which we call a coping plan. What are the steps that we can put in place that we can communicate with the nurses and the doctors for them to be able to help implement that will help this child get through the procedure easier and also more compliant? It brings all of the things that we just talked about back into play. So how much information do they want to know? And then talk about the steps accordingly. Do they want to watch? Do they want to look away? If they want to look away, how do they want to be distracted? Do they want to watch something? Do they want to play I Spy? Do they simply want to turn their head and have a conversation? Do they want to take deep breaths or use a stress ball to have some tension relief? What are the things that we can do to help?
A coping plan is a great way to wrap up because it takes everything we've talked about and puts it all together in a way that you can help your child and give them that control so they feel part of their medical experience. I think it's important too, timing of the coping plan. When you're working with older kids, like your teens, you can have these conversations days in advance. It works best when they have that time to be like, okay, I'm going to be having X procedure done because they're an individual, they're identifying themselves as their own person in society. They want to come up with their own questions a lot of times, and maybe even come up with part of their own coping plan before they're collaborating on it with a family member or a medical professional. They have the ability to process and understand, I won't be having this until next Tuesday, because they understand the concept of time. These are broad age ranges just to help break down, but if you're working kind of in the more school age, kiddo, the day before or the night before, tomorrow you will be having an MRI. That gives them time. You can start to assess what the stressors might be. They need the time to process, but if you give them too much time, they're going to get confused on when the actual procedure is happening. And then with your toddlers and preschoolers, it's really hours to just before. If you've already had medical experiences with your kiddo, you may already know what some of their stressors are, in which case I'd say hours is okay because you might be able to work on some of those stressors with them.
I just want to reiterate to all you parents that you know your child best. And so if you are listening to us and you're like, why would I do that? You should probably trust your gut because you know your child best.
Allie, this by far is one of my favorite ones we've done. It really breaks down our thought processes, child life specialists, when we go in and assess rooms and help parents and children. And I know that both of us have the goals to empower other parents. Hopefully you learned a little something that you can put in your back pocket and take with you that'll help you and your child in your next medical experience. And if you have a question about anything, because nothing is one size fits all, nothing, feel free to reach out. We're happy to help.
100%. We really want to take our experience and knowledge and bring it outside of the hospital and into your homes. So you can reach us by either following us on Instagram at Medical Mamas LLC, or you can reach out to us via email. And our email is admin@medicalmamas.org. Thanks so much for listening to Medical Mamas. Make sure you follow us on Instagram at Medical Mamas LLC. Subscribe to our Apple Podcasts and rate and review us if you like us.